UGG, now broadcasting in English. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's program, in Czech books, David Vaughan will mark the Charles Dickens bicentenary with an interesting revelation about the much-loved Czech literary figure, the good soldier Švejk. Peter Smith will bring you this month's screen check, and then you can enjoy another part from David Vaughan's popular history series from the archives, which Radio Prague is currently rerunning. Now, launching into Czech books with the Charles Dickens bicentenary might sound confusing, but here's a question for you. What is the connection between the great 19th century English novelist and the best-loved Czech literary antihero? The answer is, surprisingly enough, that without Dickens, we quite possibly wouldn't have Švejk at all. David Vaughan looks at this and some other Czech links with Dickens in this week's Czech books.
Czechs have been reading Dickens for over 170 years, going back to a time when the novelist himself was still in his 20s. For many Czechs, the most famous Dickens characters, Pip, Mr. Micawber, Miss Havisham or Mr. Pickwick, are old friends. But at a political level, the history of Dickens in the Czech-speaking world has been more than a little complicated, defined by the many twists and turns of Czech history. Zdeněk Beran from Prague's Charles University has devoted many years to studying the 19th century English novel. I met him in the somewhat Dickensian environment of his cramped, book-filled office overlooking Prague's old Jewish cemetery, and he began our conversation by telling me about the very first Czech Dickens translation, from a time when most translations of English literature in Prague were appearing in German.
In 1840, the first Czech translation of a Dickens sketch appears in Czech, right? And it was made by Jakub Malý, who was, at that time, was a young translator and who later became a translator, one of the relevant translators of that time of the work of William Shakespeare. So it's sure that his command of English was very good.
And so he was translating directly from the English and not through the German, as some other translators were.
Exactly. It was quite exceptional to translate directly from English. And he translated a sketch called Criminal Courts from the sketches by Boz. And it's very interesting that it's a good translation. And what is also interesting about this is that because it's about criminal courts, he had to invent many Czech terms because the official language here was German.
And so there was no Czech vocabulary for court terminology?
Absolutely. No words for jury, for instance. And so he had to invent these. And he did it very well. So it was his translation in 1840 in his own magazine called Denice, which is something like Day Star or Morning Star. And the first novel translated by Dickens came also in the 1840s, and it was Oliver Twist. Again, a very good translation by a person whose name was Moritz Fialka. Then we have a few more sketches, more or less adaptations translated from German. And this situation actually ends in 1848, which is interesting. Because
it's, of course, a revolutionary year in many parts of Europe.
Exactly. And the political situation, I mean, here in Prague was very controversial and many, many people were imprisoned. And for several decades, no Czech translation of Dickens appeared. And I asked myself, why is it so?
So in the years after 1848, Dickens just disappeared in the Czech lands.
Yes, I mean, in the Czech language, he disappeared almost completely. There is no Dickens in the 1850s to speak about, no Dickens in the 1860s even. His name is mentioned in these years by several Czech writers, for instance. And it's very interesting that it's Dickens the humorist that is mentioned. Božena Němcová, one of the great figures of the early period of independent Czech literature, recommends the Pickwick Papers to her son. people knew about Dickens, and Dickens was simply very much in favor of them. But the question is why he disappeared. And I think that it was simply because he was a controversial person.
It's interesting because obviously after 1848 there was the introduction of absolutist rule and there was a considerable degree of suppression of freedoms and of national freedoms in what's now the Czech Republic and the Czech language. But it didn't last that long, did it? I mean, by around about 1860, the Habsburg monarchy was already beginning to become much more open and tolerant again, wasn't it?
Exactly. There are two answers, actually. Either there was some pressure not to publish Dickens in Czech because simply the Czech people should not be reminded of the freedom that he preached in his work, of the humanity, actually, and of the oppressive character of state institutions. And second, and this is what I really don't know for sure, but definitely there are many, many books by Dickens available here in the German translation. So perhaps this supplied the need of Dickens for the Czech-speaking intelligentsia, because the intelligentsia, even the Czech-speaking intelligentsia, of course, was also a German-speaking community. The fact is that in the year of Dickens's death, which is 1870, Jan Neruda, one of the greatest poets of that time, regretted that we had heard no translation of Dickens so far, which is not entirely true. We had Oliver Twist, but no other novel by Dickens.
And there is something in common, isn't there, between Jan and Neruda and Dickens? They're both writing about, predominantly about life in the first half of the 19th century. They both have this way of creating character and also of saying quite serious things through humour.
Yes, yes, very much so. And both of them knew the life in a city. So they were very modern in mapping a city life, actually. And, you know, this is a very interesting remark, actually, because in the 20th century, in the post-war years, and immediately before the communist coup, actually, a text by Dickens that was published in these years was The Chimes, one of his Christmas tales. Mm-hmm. And this publication, one of the last publications of a private publisher, was accompanied by a preface by the translator. And he compared Dickens to Neruda, exactly. He found that there is affinity between these two writers.
You talk about how the Habsburgs didn't like Dickens, and yet he's not an overtly political writer. He's very critical of institutions, but it's nearly always at a moral level rather than a political level, isn't it? Also, of course, there's very little in his novels that deals with the national questions or the language questions that you see in Central Europe at the time, simply because Dickens was in a completely different context.
Consider this. The only novel published in the 1840s was Oliver Twist. And actually what this book says is that the conditions in a public institution like a workhouse are, from the point of view of a person's development, especially emotional development, are not much different from the conditions which you have among criminals. And Oliver actually finds more love among criminals, because there's Nancy there, than in a public institution. And I think this was very undesirable, you know, picture of society, oppressive picture of society, you know, so perhaps this is one of the reasons. There is an interesting parallel between this time we are talking about, which means between the late 1840s and the whole period of communism in Czechoslovakia. One of his novels was published in the early 50s and never reprinted after this, and it was The Tale of Two Cities. The book is about the French Revolution, and the picture of the French Revolution is not a favorable picture. The book is about how a new regime can be cruel, especially to those classes of people that are simply bad classes. You know, a lot of people experienced, I mean, in the 50s, but even in the following decades, experienced oppression due to their origin, simply people coming not from working class families had more problems in getting to university, for instance, and so on. And there's a very cruel scene, actually, in this novel when a member of French aristocracy is actually persecuted just because he's a member of aristocratic family. So I think that this was one of the major reasons why this novel, even though by a writer who was considered a great classic of English literature, was never again republished during the communist era.
And that's interesting because other Dickens novels, in fact, were published and were retranslated, weren't they, in the course of the communist era. But obviously this book was just a little bit too close to the bone, The Tale of Two Cities.
Exactly. Yes. I think so. I really genuinely think so.
We haven't talked at all about the period of the First Republic between 1918, when Czechoslovakia came into being, and the Second World War. But in fact, Dickens was very influential to that generation of Czech writers as well, wasn't he?
Yes, I absolutely agree. What is perhaps the most interesting moment about this is that Jaroslav Hašek, the author of The Good Soldier Schwake, was inspired by one of the characters of Charles Dickens and is the unforgettable Sam Weller from the Pickwick Papers in it. And it's sure that he modeled his Good Soldier Schwake on this character. And even the conversation strategies, I would say, are taken from the character of Sam Weller. And a friend of Hašek, František Langer, who was a playwright, adapted the Pickwick Papers for stage, and he remembered that Hašek liked the novel, and he also recalled in one of his essays he wrote on this how he himself admired the Pickwick Papers. He even claimed that he had read the book each year, and he turned it into drama, which is an immensely difficult job because actually the book is too lengthy. The story is too rambling, I would say. So he took the main storyline, and actually he made a play about two values, which I think are typical Dickensian values, about love and all the dangers connected with love, and about friendship, and how friendship can save man from the pitfalls of love. Actually, so it's wonderful. And the play was staged here in 1930 and was not successful, actually. I don't know why, but it was produced in Sweden, and if I'm not mistaken, in Norway as well, and met with immense success there. So it's hard to understand, but it's so.
And finally, today, Dickens is well known in the Czech Republic, but predominantly through the film adaptations of his novels. Do people in this country today read Dickens?
I think so. There are not many new translations of Dickens, actually. As far as I know, only minor pieces such as The Christmas Carol were translated a few years ago, and there are no new translations of his novels, with the exception of one. And I think that this translation was very, very good, and the reception of this book was very, very good as well. And it was Dickens's last unfinished novel, The Mystery of Edwin Drood. And, you know, it's a really like a kind of mystery story. And there were attempts to finish this book by many people, because there is a great mystery about the disappearance of the hero in the novel. And this was immensely well received here.
Zdeněk Beran, thank you very much indeed for talking to Radio Prague about Charles Dickens and the fascinating history of his reception here in the Czech Republic or in the Czech-speaking world. Thank you.
Thank you very much for inviting me to this.
David Vaughan with Czech Books, and he will be back with a fresh edition next week in which he will be talking to writer Tomáš Zmeškal about his life and work. Now, for the film fans among you, here is Peter Smith with the latest from Czech cinematography in this month's Screen Czech.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Screen Czech with me, Peter Smith. Coming up in today's programme, the undisputed most famous Czech film director, Miloš Forman, speaks about his varied career, both here in the Czech Republic and in Hollywood. And also I'll be talking to the model, singer and now actress, Iva Frölingová, about what it's like to make her screen debut and the ups and downs of working with one of the most successful Czech directors, still resident in the country, Filip Renč. Let's start with Miloš Forman, director of such famous Czech movies as Fireman's Ball and Loves of a Blonde in the 1960s, before his move stateside and Hollywood blockbusters such as One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and Amadeus. A child of Jewish parents who perished in World War II Nazi concentration camps, Forman, speaking at a recent director round table in the US, started by explaining how his early trauma started to shape his life and career.
It's much easier to lose parents when you're a child than when you're an adult. Because as a child, you don't really realize it's what's happening. It's, you know, the finality of life, you don't comprehend that, you know. But of course, you know, later after puberty, when you start to realize what's happening, and after the war, when I... Because everybody sheltered me, you know, nobody told me. I was just, oh, your parents are in a camp, in a concentration camp. Well, only camp I knew was the Boy Scout camp, and nobody was telling me what's, you know, the horrors of which I learned after the war when I, you know, was reaching puberty and realized the tragedy. It was a mixture of, you know, the tragedy and comedy I saw around myself.
After being expelled from his orphanage school, the young Forman went to Prague and went into filmmaking, becoming part of the so-called Czech New Wave of the 1960s, a rebel movement against the mainstream regime-sensitive Czech movies of the time.
The reaction of all of us who started in the, you know, early 60s making movies was not to follow our idols, but it was a reaction to the stupidity and superficiality of the so-called social realism movies. Oh, you know, it was a wonderful period in one sense that because we were all in the same danger. First of all, we were lucky because everyone was different. You know, Chytila was different from Jireš, Jireš from Pasar, Pasar from Nemec, Nemec from me, from Juracek. So that was not reason for competition or jealousy. For this reason, plus the establishment tried to quelch, you know, to suppress this filmmaking. So Attack on One was attack on all of us. So we really stuck together. And thanks to the reaction to our films abroad, suddenly it was difficult for the authorities to pretend that this is something which can be dismissed. That was the situation which saved us.
But it was only a matter of time before his movies raised eyebrows within the communist regime, most notably Fireman's Ball.
Well, it was briefly released in July 68. And on in August 21st, 68, the Russian invaded Czechoslovakia, and the film was banned officially forever. So I was legally, you know, outside when the Russians invaded Czechoslovakia, and so finally I decided, because I knew that having a film, this film banned for forever, I wouldn't be able to continue work. You know, unless I would conform and do something, you know, make some propaganda communist movie. So I decided rather to stay, to, you know, emigrate.
And Forman set about re-establishing himself as a film director in the United States, adapting remarkably fast to the cultural differences, even embracing the flower power movement of the time, which was ironically to lead to his first major movie, Hair.
I was here for the, I think it was for the New York Film Festival in 67, and I saw very first public production of Hair. And I went backstage and I talked to this, my broken English, Jimmy and Jerry, and found out to my amazement that they knew my films, they knew Loves of a Blonde, and I wanted to make the movie of Hair.
And on the back of Hair, he was hired to direct the film that would lead to his first Oscar, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
You know, it's funny because when I got this offer to make Cuckoo's Nest, a friend of mine, an American, friend of mine told me, don't touch it, because, you know, that's very dangerous, because it's, you know, it's such Americana, and you can't really do it right, and if you flop with your first really film, you know, that will be the end of the... I said, what are you talking, Americana? For you, it's a book, it's a literature, it's a fiction. But for me, it was reality. I lived it. Communist Party was my big nurse. What's the difference? So, and that's the same thing, you know, because, yes, people can have different tastes, different colors, different... but the nature, human nature is the same everywhere.
Cigarettes are not important. Sit down, will you? Christ's sake, cigarettes.
You sit down!
Yes, but I want to know...
Sit down, Mr. Cheswick.
I want to...
Give him a cigarette, will you, Harding?
My last one.
The film did very well at the Oscars, with Forman picking up his first for Best Director. And this led to his next, and possibly his grandest, project, Amadeus. Filmed in 1984, it was the first time that Forman had returned to his native Czechoslovakia.
It was very emotional when I went there for the first time to negotiate and see locations. But once we started to shoot, you know, it's funny, you have to cut yourself emotionally from everything totally and to be able to concentrate on your work. It was interesting, you know, because there was a great opposition in the political circles to allow me to shoot there, especially the communist cell at the Barando studio. The film directors, they wrote letters to the central committee of the party, you know, not to allow me to do the film, but the Ministry of Finance, they allowed me to... It was somehow absurd. Of course, we were constantly under the surveillance of the secret police, you know, which didn't bother us because we didn't do anything except making a movie.
Almost comic. Just a pulse. Bassoons, basset horns. Like a rusty squeeze box.
Again, Forman took home the Oscars with Amadeus. Forman, however, was less prolific after the film, but awards did follow for such films as Man on the Moon and Goya's Ghosts. Age, he says, has finally made him more choosy.
When you are getting older, every film is 2 years of your life. So getting older, you know, think a little harder on what you want to spend 2 years of your life on. And secondly, I feel like I didn't stop working at all. But it's for me like... My love left me. So you are not ready immediately, look, you know, you are not emotionally ready to start another relationship.
Miloš Forman there, still working and even doing some acting at the age of 79.
Věřím ve tvé sny, věřím ve všechny ty dny, kdy s tebou vstávám. Věřím znova a zas, i když všechno kolem nás uvadá.
Moving on now to the Czech model and singer, Iva Frilingová, who popped into the studio last week to discuss her new career direction as an actor. Frilingová, who usually sings in French, stars in a new TV drama, Cruel Infidelity, directed by Philip Wrench. I started by asking her what were the fresh challenges she faced as an actress.
I felt like an alien, you know, in the middle of all those people. I felt like I don't belonged there, but in the same time I was so happy for this experience, and I was very grateful to Philip Branch that he let me do this. I mean, that's great, it's amazing for me, but it's just, I think it's two different groups, musicians and actors. It's two different planets. Actors, like, they in the backstage they say the stories and they talk about, you know, little stories that happened to them, and they're full of smiles and stuff, and musicians are just, you know, it's a different planet because they're kind of depressed and just like, you know, yeah, well. And so it's two different planets, and suddenly I didn't know what to do, how to, you know, react, how to be, and so that was a bit strange.
And what was it like working as an actress for the renowned director Philip Wrench?
What's great is that he knows what he's doing, so he knows how to explain it to you, so you know what to do, and those are very important things, I think. In the same time, you know, me, I think he kind of took me as a little girl for fun or something, you know. It's just he was talking to all those actors like, okay, Monica, you're doing this great. Okay, Peter, do this. Yeah, okay, perfect. Eva, you're sitting very well. It's very cute, you know. I'm like, come on, you know. I think he saw that I was nervous and he was trying to make me feel okay with his little jokes that just, you know, always made me laugh. And I was like, what am I doing, you know? But in the same time, that was good because it relieved some of the stress I had, so.
Eva Freelinkova there, now an actress as well as a singer and a model. Anyway, that's about it for Screen Check for today. So from me, Peter Smith, please join me again soon and keep watching.
Věřím, že mě znáš, když se ráno usmíváš.
That was Peter Smith with Screen Check, and he'll be back in exactly a month's time for the final edition of Radio Prague's film mini-series. Now, join us on a walk down memory lane with David Vaughan.
Nothing better symbolizes the political thaw in 1960s Czechoslovakia than the boom in jazz, which many saw as embodying the very idea of individual expression and freedom from constraint. So you can imagine the excitement when Louis Armstrong came to Prague in March 1965. Many people felt that Czechoslovakia had at last come in from the cold, and his concert at Prague's Lucerna Ballroom was a cultural milestone.
Both the shark has pretty teeth, dear, and he shows them pearly white, just a jackknife has Mac Heath, dear.
Satchmo singing the immortal Mac the Knife, and he ended the concert by thanking his audience. The Czech passion for jazz had come as quite a surprise to him.
We want you to know that we had a very pleasant week here in Prague to be playing to such wonderful audience and meeting so many fine people, and to know that there were so many jazz clubs in Prague. We were very happy about that, and we want you to know that we're leaving tomorrow, and as long as we live, there'll always be not only a memory, but it'll be right here in our hearts that you're the greatest. Thank you very much. You're wonderful. Thank you.
The concert had been introduced by Jiří Suchý and Jiří Schlitter, whose Semaphore Theatre had become legendary by the mid-1960s. In the spirit of Voskovec and Verich before the war, they combined satirical and humorous cabaret with a love of jazz. As the regime relaxed, Semaphore found its way onto the cultural mainstream.
V cizí řeči? Mohl ovšem za dolary.
Despite several risque jokes at the expense of the regime, in this sketch, another famous member of the Semaphore team, Miroslav Horníček, is joking that he'll only use foreign words if he's paid in hard currency, Czechoslovak radio was quite happy to broadcast the Semaphore New Year's Eve show on December the 31st, 1967. Here's Jiří Schlitter singing in deliberately dreadful English.
I like jazz.
And thus began that most momentous of years, 1968.
That was David Vaughan with From the Archives. Radio Prague is currently rerunning the popular miniseries, and you will find all of it at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. We'll be glad to hear from you as always. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for joining us and goodbye.
vous écoutez Radio